So you can say the title of the talk is Psychological Space and Emptiness. I want to start very simply that we only know things with our mind because of differences. We don't know anything other than differences from one moment to the next. We know the sound of thunder because of the silence that came before the thunder. Otherwise it would be the sound of traffic in Tel Aviv. We don't know. We don't even notice that there's traffic in Tel Aviv, because there's no silence before or after. So we're always experiencing difference, silence and sound. Something is not and something is there. A thought is a form, but we only know it's a form because it's a form coming out of no form. Otherwise we wouldn't know it's a thought. We wouldn't be able to think a thought if it didn't come from no thought. Background. So background then arises a thought that which we recognize, and it carries a story or a picture. But then that disappears. So because there is something that appears and disappears, we know it. Otherwise we wouldn't know it. It would just be the same all the time. And all, if you like, the basic, fundamental, the Heart Sutta statement of form and emptiness, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, is that we can't really separate the two in the consciousness. One, it comes because of the other comes because of the one. We can't really pull out just form or just emptiness, because they're all the time in relationship. And so a thought is a form based on no form, namely space or gaps or ground. And our problem is that we really don't like the ground. Something about becoming a person, that means the karmic process of becoming somebody, some becoming a living conscious being, means that we're always hanging on to form and trying to get away from no form. So we're like birds jumping onto a branch, and we don't like the flight of the bird. We want to jump on, hold a branch, and then the next branch, or a monkey holding onto the branch, and the next branch, the next branch, the next branch. So we're not very happy in between things. And because of that, we're really used to, forms. We focus on things. We pay attention to things. We are conscious of things. There's always an address. There's always a place we're putting our mind. We're hanging on to things. We're always interested in forms. We try and ignore the ground on which forms arise. We don't like it very much. So, you could say that form is built on a whole sea or underground, under the radar basis of a source of form. So a thought is based on so much processing, memory, hints, in kind of sources really, which are not really conscious. And that's the, you know, most of the iceberg, the kirchon, is under the mai, under the water, 90%. And probably in the mind it's like 95%. and 5% is what we know called a thought or an image or a concept. And so we should be interested in what you might call the undifferentiated. You know that? How would you say that in Hebrew? Undifferentiated.
Lomufcha.
Okay, the undifferentiated parts of our consciousness. Our consciousness is a stream, like a stream of mind. 95% of it is undifferentiated, is lo mufchan, and a little bit is differentiated into a clear form that we can recognize. Like, I see your face, that's a form. Your form that I see, Michal, is built on all my experience of Michal in the past, and all the experience of I've had in my life, which is invisible. But I know it's Michal. It's not just memory, it's everything built around the feelings, this and that, my moment of experience of Michal, or my experience of myself. So this undifferentiated world in the mind stream is very big, and it's where we begin to have access when we meditate. So an ordinary person really wouldn't tend not to look at any of this stuff. And emptiness, where we begin to be interested in this. And interested means we begin to look at the gaps between thought, for example. Where is the thought coming from? Where is it going to? Where is this moment coming from? I mean, what's the source of this moment that arises and then disappears again? And in psychology, Western psychology, there's quite a lot of work on this, which, you know, maybe some of you know a lot more than me, because when I start talking about Western psychology, I'm a baby, all right? You know, just, it's not my profession. So some of you here, psychologists, know a lot more about it. But, for example, there's an awful lot of discussion, and I've been reading stuff in the past, about figure and ground, how when we look at something, we always look at a figure that we point to, but it's all, figure is always depending on the ground, without which we can't see a figure or a shape. The shape is depending on the what's background that gives it a shape. But we're busy with the shape. We don't pay attention to the background. But it's a background is the source of a shape. And also the shape depends on the background. So the two are in relationship all the time, any shape. The undifferentiated parts of the stream of mind are really a place of much more silence, much more quiet. They're really... the spaces in between things are really where we can feel more stillness. And the formation of a thought or an image or a picture or here I'm hearing a sound, even I don't process this sound very much. If I process the sound, I hear, I could think ambulance or... But even without the processing, it's still a sound that appears and is strong and is a form. And it's movement, the mind is moving towards the sound. The sound arises, the mind is moving towards it. There's movement in the mind. And stillness is a lot more the undifferentiated places, the unprocessed places. And we can pay attention to that. And be there. Sometimes we need to be a lot more open in our meditation practice and in our awareness so as to catch, to feel the background to form. And that's where we're in a world of presence, nochut, which is ground rather than form. But it needs us to be more open and relaxed and not very busy with trying to pick up form. Now, it is possible in concentrated meditation also to get there through a form, like in jhana. Jhana practice would be going into a form until it kind of disappears and then you're in the formless. But it's quite difficult. So we can more easily experience the formless by a much more open, soft, no boundary kind of meditation practice, which can be part of what we do. Maybe not the whole thing, but and it can lead to stillness, where we're very open and resting in the ground of things, the sources of things, just the beingness of things, and a sound of the ambulance will come arising and disappearing, and we're still there in the ground. So this undifferentiated place is important for us. A place of stillness, a place of sources, a place of less form, less conditioning. And it's not so easy to catch it, as I say, by focusing. Because often if we focus on something, it immediately disappears. And one writer wrote, I think it's William James, if someone quoted William James, saying, it's a bit like trying to turn on the light fast enough so that we can see the darkness. If we turn the light on so quick, then we can catch darkness. I think William James, in like 120 years ago, wrote about how difficult it is, based on focusing, to actually see the undifferentiated ground of our consciousness. But it's a very much the territory of vipassana. It's very much the territory of felt sense, focusing, Gendling, Eugene Gendling, the sense of below the radar, what the sense is, rather than what it is specifically that we pay attention to. What is a sense? What's the feeling, the gentle feeling behind things? And it can, if we really go there, that's the place of a lot of mystical experience as well, and ecstatic experience, where for example, the deep sense of connectedness with nature, with something open and free, with something beyond boundary that we can have, it's still content, it's still there in the consciousness, it's still material, but it's not at the level of form. It's a level of interaction, interconnection, ground, undifferentiated, pre-form. And it's just being there. And that can lead, if we're really there with it, for deeply there with it, it's a very joyful place to be. It's a liberating place to be. And a lot of mystical experiences will be there, in that place of me and the world, but less boundary, more right brain, like this woman that had the stroke, right? And she experienced this kind of ground of being place, where the specifics of the form dropped away, and she was in the place of not knowing, and openness and bliss, basically, and joy. And the joy comes from release. We don't expect joy all the time there. But when we enter that place, we can have a lot of joy, because it's release from form, from the pressure of forms, of who I am, and what I think, and what I need. And so we can have a great joy in that place. Ecstasy. But ground is not yet the same as real emptiness. And here we're really, I want to kind of try and throw three great territories of consciousness on you. The first will be form, which we're used to doing, called listening to something. The second would be the ground and the background and the sources and the gaps between the thought and presence. And the third is beyond all of that. And that's really true emptiness. And I'll talk about that in a minute. We can easily get stuck on a model where the ground is equal to the unconscious or the subconscious. I'm still talking about the undifferentiated, the number two, not the number three yet. I haven't get there yet. But the undifferentiated, the sources of form, can sometimes, we can think this is the unconscious. And the model, for example, that I gave of under the kirchon, the underneath, is very much a model based on 20th century, I don't know, Freud and Jung and so on, and the unconscious. And I just want to, in a way, although, you know, we use that language sometimes, I use it myself because it's kind of common language, but I think in Dharma, we have to be careful of that place, because it's often, it's often used as a kind of a place that we want to get away from, or where all our problems are, or sitting, or a place that's frightening and difficult, and that's where all the demons are, and very much in a sort of Freudian, Jungian, this place of the archetypes in the Jungian sense, and it's kind of given a place called unconscious or subconscious, which creates a duality. There is conscious and there is unconscious. Whereas the Dharma would see all of this happening in the moment, that there's not an unconscious, but there is all the sources that are present in the person, in the present moment, that give a possibility of saying, that's an ambulance sound passing through the street. All the sources that give rise to that are there in the present, at the moment that I'm listening to the ambulance. So it's not an unconscious place, which is a place of problem. It's a place of relationship. But it's under the radar, so we don't actually, we're not conscious of it, so it's undifferentiated, it's the sources of things. But it's right in the present moment. So the Dharma, and I think modern psychology, I'm really, some of you, you know more, as I say, a lot more than me about it, but I was talking to my daughter about it yesterday, and she said that in modern psychology, they use a word like schema, which is patterning. All the patterns that give rise to the moment, our experience in the moment, are all there in the experience of the moment. And it's very Buddhist in a sense. It's very similar to what the Dharma would say. The Dharma would say, our experience of the present is built from all the sankharas, namely the conditioning cycles that we've built in order to understand what is the present, what is happening, in order to say, this is an ambulance. That needs lots of sankharas, tendencies, patterns, and all of those are built into that moment of experience. And she said that modern psychology would see it quite similarly. But as I say, you know more than me. I think part of the issue of 20th century, early 20th century psychology has been a fear of the of the undifferentiated. It's the big fear of loss of control. Because the one thing that the 20th century and before 19th century and all of science is built on, the mind, the logical mind, controls everything. And if we're not logical, conceptual, we're lost. And so there's a big fear of the uncontrollable. And so they put the unconscious full of demons and issues and problems and they were afraid of it. Jung wrote that he thought Eastern forms of meditation were dangerous because they made us introvert, go drop down into this unconscious place and get stuck with the demons. It's basically what he said. And he didn't agree. He thought meditation was a bad thing. And he just didn't understand the different psychology of Buddhism, where meditation is actually waking up to more subtle places. It's not hiding away into the dark sort of basement of the mind. That was the model of the 20th century, early model, based on need to control nature, the need to have a science, and need to have the thinking process in charge. And then anything that stops the thinking or gives weight to the pre-thinking was dangerous. A word that you might have heard used for this undifferentiated place of sources, is alaya. Alaya comes from Sanskrit, or is a Sanskrit word, and it means the storehouse, basically mahsan. And alaya consciousness is the mahsan, and it's exactly what I was talking about before, saying, I know Michal, I was saying, because there is a storehouse of sankharas underneath, of all I've experienced in the past, that allows me at this moment to recognize and know Michal, and then this moment of seeing Michal will be put in the store, and the next time I see Michal, it will be a different experience based on everything else that happened before. So it's kind of not just memory, but the whole experience of formations and relationships and feelings and so on that allows me to connect with Michal, with myself, with anything at all. This is in this place as well, alaya, and it's similar to the schema that my daughter was telling me about, the schemas or patternings that allow us to see something.
They're very differentiated. סכימות שאנחנו עובדים בטיפול עם אנשים על הסכמות שלהם, אז...
So maybe that's the way...
לא, אבל גם הסנקרות במובן, כשאתה אומר נגיד שהחוויה הזאת שלך עם מיכל, היא נכנסת למחסן. עד שאמרת את זה, אני דמיינתי שהמחסן זה כאילו רק החלקים, יש לנו שיער של מיכל והאור בחדר, וכאילו... אבל אם אתה אומר שהחוויה נכנסת, אז החוויה של מיכל היא כן דבר מובחן. It is differentiated, כי יש את החוויה מיכל, את החוויה איתי, ויש את החוויה עם עצמך, והן כן מובחנות.
לא כל כך, because 19% of it is unknown, and unclear, unformed, just sources, fragments, חתיכות של מחשבות, של זיכרונות, tendencies, נטיות של... For example, I might be interested in something from Michal or from that is a tendency from me that I don't even know anything about it. It's like a huge... Yes, and it's the sources of things. They can't be mufchan if they are the sources of havchana. The sources of havchana are not the very mufchanim. They are before that. So alaya is all the sources, and a lot of that is just not formed. But maybe, as I say, my ignorance of modern psychology, so maybe forget the word schema, because clearly it's used in therapy in a different way than I mean.
אבל נגיד אתה אומר conditioning.
Right.
זה גם שם במחסן.
Yes.
אז ה-conditioning, לעתים הוא יכול להיות גם משהו ש... לפחות איך שאנחנו...
We don't even know it's there. We know it's there if we look for it. We need vipassana to see how much conditioning we really have. Otherwise we're just functioning on automat. It makes us function automatically. We don't know it's there. That's the 90% under the Kirchon. It allows us to see a form. Without that, we would have no form. But we don't know what it is. It's just so, unless we look carefully, we will not know, because it's not itself form. It's also transpersonal. It's not even personal. It's also, you know, transpersonal stuff in there, like qualities of being called human. For example, a conscience. Matzpun. We all share a conscience. The content of it will be different, but we've got one of them. But it's transpersonal. It's there inside. So we all know how to behave with each other. There's agreements. But to allow this event to happen right now, we have an agreement that we're all sitting here doing certain things. That's not spoken. It's agreement based on something human, transpersonal. So it's got so much in it, which is assumed, muvan me'lav. And also a lot of silence. And a lot of unformed. Yeah, but as I say, I'm just trying to say that when you use words like subconscious or unconscious, you're really not in Buddhist territory, and you're not even, as far as I know, in the territory of modern psychology. You're in 100 years ago territory. That's what I understand, but, you know, you maybe know more than me about that.
אני מנדדת עוד רגע. נגיד חומסקי, שהוא מדבר בלינגוויסטיקס, זה שיש כאילו איזה מבנה,
right.
אנחנו יכולים למזוג לתוכו כל מיני שפות, כל מיני
right.
זה, ואנחנו לא
right.
מודעים למבנה הזה.
בדיוק.
אז זה משהו כזה.
כן, כן. זה סנקרה. Sankara that allows us to see a form, without which we will not be able to speak. And no, he's the source of it. And we go further into the source, and we have silence, we have presence, we have just being there, but it's very unformed that allows us to be awake and engaged with others and. So another level altogether, which really is not in this place of sources, I would say is a pure awareness. And pure awareness is like pure presence. And what Zen would call no mind. And where Dzogchen would call it primal awareness, the source of the just awareness itself, the power of awareness. It doesn't have even any source in it. And there's no self in there. It's almost nothing to do with us. It doesn't something I can't own, I can't have. It's a place of just primal source with no content at all. And it's the source of, it is the ground which allows everything to happen, but it's totally silent. So, for example, we could say we have awareness, because otherwise we'd be dead. Awareness came into the body. We were born. So there is some kind of a primal awareness, and from there we build experience, and we know the world. And so there's a kind of a chain building up from primal awareness to sources of experience to form. So, and this is repeated whenever we have any experience. Any experience is based on this chain, if you like. So the basic is primal awareness presence that allows us to be alive and being. You can call it being, which has no content and is not a source, really. It's just, it's empty. And then karma creates from there sources. And from the source grows form, a thought, so on. All of that is conditioned by karma. There's some very, very beautiful mythological images of this. For example, Shiva Shakti in the Hindu mythology. Shakti is the female power that comes from Shiva, who is the source. And female power is a power of expression that begins the process. And it's often seen as a dance. In the Tibetan mythologies, the Dakinis are female goddess, because they're goddesses, angels, that dance based on nothing. They dance in space. The space is nothing. It's just the sort of primal awareness, and the Dakinis dancing there and creating form, creating a me, a person, creating an image, creating an experience. It's a dance of the Dakini. They're constantly dancing and turning. And in Kabbalah, you've got something very, very similar, you know, where the source is Keter or Ein Sof. It's kind of dead. There isn't anything there. It's like just primal awareness just doesn't do anything. And so you need the tree of life. You need the beginning of Bina and female, again, Bina, consciousness to make a form, and then you have the world. So it's kind of, it's in deep inside mythology, this a beautiful image of Shava and Shiva. Shava is a corpse. Same word, Shava, Shiva. Shava is a picture of Shiva as a dead body. And Shiva is a dance, dancing god. So he's dancing on his own corpse, meaning he's the expression, and the corpse is the ground of the dead ground. And there's, you know, loads and loads of stuff in Kabbalah about this as well. Like the king is often totally, totally cut off. He's not existing in the world at all. He's a far distant character, like Ahasuerus in Purim story. The king doesn't do anything. Everything is played around him. He's like Shava, like a kind of a ultimate. But because of him, everything happens. But he's like a blank. And there's a lot in mythology about this, and it points to a spacious, empty place, which is emptiness, real emptiness. And it is not owned by us. And mind is there, in a way. I want to read to you initiation into the nature of mind in a Dzogchen text, which is a beautiful text. I think the best Dzogchen text that I know. It's The Flight of the Garuda. And um, this is after, this is a text of instruction. And so the instruction before this is to try and find your mind. And to try and see, is it moving, is it still, is it coloured, is it there, is it boundary where? And you give up. In the end, you give up. There's nothing there that you can find. And so he says, when you fail to find a mind that you could point to and say, this is it. And when you fail to find so much as an atom that you could call something, then your failure is supremely successful. Firstly, mind has no origin. Since it is originally emptiness, its essence is without substance. Secondly, it has no location, no color, no shape. Finally, it doesn't move. Without moving, it disappears without a trace. Its activity is empty activity. Its emptiness is empty appearances. Mind's nature is not created by any cause in the first place, and it is not destroyed by any agent or condition at the end. It is a constant quantity. Nothing can be added to it or taken from it. It is incapable of increase or decrease. It cannot be filled and it cannot be emptied. Mind's nature is all pervasive. It's everywhere. It's the ground of both samsara and nirvana. It is without bias or partiality. It doesn't go one place or another place. No form demonstrates that it exists more clearly than any other form. And it manifests all and everything equally without any obstruction. Mind cannot be established or defined as anything at all specific, since it goes beyond the limitations of existence and non-existence. Without coming and going, it is without birth and death, without clarity and without obstruction. The nature of mind in its purity is like a stainless crystal ball. Its essence is emptiness, its nature is clarity, and its responsiveness is continuous. In no way whatever is the nature of mind affected by samsara. From the first, it is Buddha. Trust this. And and I'll quote the Buddha himself, something very similar, when he is really talking about something of the same place. And he said, there is that sphere of being where there is no earth, no water, no fire, nor wind. No experience of infinity of space, of infinity of consciousness, of no thingness. Or even of neither perception nor non-perception. Here there is neither this world nor another world, neither moon nor sun. This sphere of being I call neither a coming nor a going nor a staying still, neither a dying nor an appearance. It has no basis, no evolution, and no support. It is the end of dukkha. So it's kind of another place, and I don't know where, did I ever tell you about the sutta of someone asked the Buddha what happens when light coming in through a room hits the wall on the other side? Did I mention this? Well, so someone asked the Buddha, what if there's a window and light comes in, it hits the wall on the other side, opposite the window, right? But supposing there's no wall, what happens then? So the Buddha said, well, it goes to what's behind the wall. Maybe there's water. And if there's no water, So it goes to what's behind there. And if there's no behind, so the Buddha said, it's totally released. So you really can't call, we're talking about a place here which is a place of awakening, which you really can't call it consciousness anymore. So in the Dzogchen tradition, it's nature of mind. They call it nature of mind, but all this is language. In the early Buddhism, it's not consciousness which is conscious of. It's something released and has no properties, no qualities, and no self in it. So it's nothing to do with, in a way, us, which is why all of the, you know, the enlightenment experience happens to nobody. You can't say, I am enlightened, because you're already then a self. So its enlightenment is enlightened. Nobody is enlightened. Nobody can be enlightened. Enlightenment enlightens itself, because it has no person to it. So, it's a subtle, it's beyond the subtle. difficult to talk about it, difficult to know what we're talking about. It's much more in the territory of iyadhyā than yadhyā, not knowing than knowing. It's in the territory of spaciousness, but it's not in the territory really of spaciousness, because like Joseph said when he was here, he was quoting something, a Tibetan teacher, and he said, oh, we're talking about spaciousness, merchav. And the Tibetan teacher said, no, that's not correct. We're talking about groundlessness, meaning no ground, that the ground has fallen away. And Joseph uses image of someone falling out of an aeroplane without a parachute, and he's terribly scared, but then he finds that actually there's no ground, so it doesn't matter anymore. witnessing edut can take us to the undifferentiated, but beyond the vipassana experience, beyond the depth in the meditation, is this place where there is no witness anymore. There is just, the closest we can maybe get to it in words would be being, presence. And I don't know what more to say in language. It is a place that we're all scared of, fundamentally scared of. Mostly what stops us being awakened is our fear of being awakened, because it's emptiness. Mostly what we're afraid of is being nothing, becoming nothing. It works through our whole life, that we always want to become someone, something. We want to know what's going to happen. We want to know who we are. We want to know what's going to happen next. Just like the image I used at the beginning of a bird going from branch to branch, we don't want to know what happens between branches. We just want to, we keep hanging on to the forms, because we're really frightened of this place, of not being, of not knowing, of emptiness. And that's the image of jumping out of a plane without a parachute, and that fear that we have. And then, you know, we find ourselves falling, but then we realize there's no ground anymore, so we have to let go. And slowly, slowly, I think as practitioners, if you like, on the spiritual journey, we should keep finding a place to rest and to rely on, that is not form. And if we keep doing that, we keep touching a place of emptiness and knowing it's all right, that place of emptiness becomes our friend. It's no longer scary. And that's an important movement because it allows emptiness to be part of our world, our universe. And that's an important step on the way to awakening. We lose the fear of being that nothing, nobody. It's like resting on clouds, leaning on clouds. So, gotta lean on a cloud. Usually we want to lean on something, but imagine just leaning on nothing. It's okay. There isn't ground, so it's okay. We just let go. So here is a non-dual place, a place of emptiness, a place of ultimate, the ultimate ground, if you like. But I have to say something important, that when touching the place of the deepest source of emptiness in us, it doesn't mean that that's where we stay. It is inside form. It's not somewhere else that is not in form. And going back to the Heart Sutta, form and emptiness are constantly in interacting. So we have to go, but in a sense, all that, you know, image of an awakened person who goes back into the marketplace, because that's life. Like the Buddha after his awakening night, then Mara asked him, you know, how do we know you're awakened? And he pointed to the earth. The earth is my witness. In other words, the earth is there as our witness. This is not about being in a total blank place, which is empty of everything, and say, that's awakening. It's going back into the world and being in the world with the emptiness and the form all the time. And in the Dzogchen tradition, there's a beautiful way to describe this, which is the union of mother and son. Like mother is the life we live, the forms, the person that I am, the memories, the sankharas, the schemas, as you put it, all the undifferentiated area of consciousness, which is all the time generating stuff. And the son is what's born, no, maybe it's the other way around. The mother, the mother is that. The son is what's born out of that, and the mother is the source. But the mother and the son get joined. Mother and son are joined all the time. We don't have one without the other. So it's inbuilt. In a moment of experience, the emptiness coming into form and going back into emptiness. And I think I'll finish with a quote from Papaji. He said, "You are the unchanging awareness in which all activities take place. To deny this is to suffer. To know this is freedom. It's not difficult to realize this because it's your true nature. Simply inquire, who am I, and watch carefully. Do not make effort, and do not stir up any thought. Look within, and stay there as the heart. Keep vigilant, keep awake, and you will see that nothing will arise, nothing comes up. This is the trick of how to keep the mind quiet and win freedom. It doesn't take time because freedom is always here. You simply have to watch. Where does the mind arise from? What is the source of this thought? Then you will see that you have always been free and that everything has been a dream." So So let's take a moment of quiet.